Time now for Dentally Speaking on Talk 1230 WYTS with Dr. Brian Kivitko. Call 821-1230. That's 821-1230 to discuss your dental issues. Now here's Dr. Kivitko on Talk 1230 WYTS.
Talk 1230 WYTS. Welcome to Dentally Speaking with Dr. Kivitko, also known as everything you've always wanted to know about dentistry, but were too numb to ask. Hello, I'm General Dentist Dr. Brian Kivitko, and today we're going to be talking with a representative of the Ohio State Dental Board, and her name is Lily Wrights. Lily is an attorney. She's been serving as the Executive Director of the Ohio State Dental Board since May of 1996. And in this capacity, she oversees the daily operations of the board, which includes the licensure, regulation, and enforcement of Ohio's dentists, dental hygienists, EFTAs, and dental assistant radiographers by administering the provisions of the Ohio Dental Practice Act. Prior to serving in this capacity, Ms. Wrights held the position of Assistant Attorney General with the Ohio Attorney General's Office for 5 years. In that position, she represented primarily the State Medical Board of Ohio. However, she did work for the State of Ohio Counselor and Social Worker Board, the State Boards of Pharmacy and Psychology, and the Ohio Department of Health. I think she's going to analyze me here in a little bit. Ms. Wrights has served as President of the American Association of Dental Administrators, and she is also a member of the American Association of Dental Examiners and the National Information Officers Association. Ms. Wrights received her Juris Doctor degree from the Cleveland Marshall College of Law in May of 1990 and was admitted to the Ohio Bar in November of 1990. So I want to welcome Ms. Wrights, Lily Wrights, to the show. I think it's great that you were so willing to get up and be here this morning with us, so thank you very much for that.
Thank you.
For those of you that maybe are reading between the lines, Lily works for the Dental Board, which is a government job, and so she really doesn't have to be up on a Sunday morning to do this. This, I think, is out of the kindness of her heart. I'm pretty sure her bosses did not say you have to do this. So with that in mind, we really do appreciate it. Before we get to questions, before we get to the topic, there are just a couple things that I want to mention. As you know, at the beginning of the show, I like to give out what we call Dr. Kivitko's question of the day. And the question of the day this week is, according to a survey of dentists — most of our questions are surveys of dentists to give you an idea, a little bit of an insight into what we think. So according to a survey of dentists, how many dentists have either dropped out or are considering dropping out of dental insurance plans? All right, accepting dental insurances. Question again, how many dentists have dropped out of the insurance plan game, if you will? All right, so we'll take your guesses. Feel free to call 821-1230, or you can send us an email to dentallyspeaking on talk1230@yahoo.com. And then the last thing I want to go over is, remember, we are having our golf outing August 23rd, and that is at Broadview Golf Course on Headley Mill Road in Pataskala. And that is August 23rd at 8 a.m. We are raising money for the Central Ohio Down Syndrome Association. And you can call the office at 262-9588 to join in. If you only have two golfers, that's fine. We'll pair you up with a couple more. All right, so let's get to the topic of the day. And you know, the name of the show is Everything You've Always Wanted to Know About Dentistry, but we're too numb to ask. And I don't think people really quite understand the role of the dental board as it relates to good dental care. So we you've probably heard me say on this show before that, and Lily, don't take this wrong, but what I have said on the air is that the dental board isn't really there to be the dentist's friend. You look like a nice person, you're nice enough to come and do this, but, you know, remember I said she's an attorney, and the dental board has full power over dentists. They show up. If there's a complaint, they show up with a subpoena. Everybody that comes to the office has a little badge that basically gives them full police powers. Is that correct?
We have certain police powers. We can't arrest you, but we have the right to inspect your office. We have the right to request documents
okay.
in furtherance of an investigation.
The the main point being is that the dental board is only in existence to protect the public. The dental board works for the dental patients, correct?
That's correct. Our primary mission is public protection, and we do that in three primary ways. We ensure that those who are licensed in the state of Ohio meet minimum education and training requirements to safely practice. And then we regulate the profession by requiring continuing education and updating practice issues, our laws and rules regarding the practice of dentistry and dental hygiene. And then we engage in enforcement activities by responding to complaints and ensuring, again, that dentists and dental hygienists are practicing safely and following the laws and rules that govern the profession.
Okay. So there is a thing called the Ohio Dental Practice Act, which is a bill that was passed by the Ohio legislature years ago.
Right.
I don't know what year, but years and years ago. And the people on the board are appointed by the governor?
That's correct.
Okay. So you have a board of directors then appointed by the governor. And there is a budget, or there is not a budget?
There is a budget. So we have, within the last 4 years, the membership of our board has increased through legislation. So we have 9 dentists, 3 dental hygienists, and 2, and 1 member that represents the public. So we have a layperson who happens to be an attorney. And our budget, our operating budget, is solely based on fees that we receive through licensure and renewal. So we do not get any money from the general revenue fund. All the money that we spend is money that we bring in through licensure fees and renewal fees.
So it's self-funded.
That's correct.
Self-funded agency.
Correct.
And the great thing about that for the public is it's not requiring tax dollars to operate.
That's correct. And I get that a lot. You know, if I'm on vacation, someone will say, oh, are tax dollars at work? And I said, no, just the dentist renewal fees at work.
Which is where I was going with this, which is they're funded by fees that we dentists pay and, I assume, fines that dentists pay.
We actually do not have fining authority.
There is no fining authority?
Except for late renewal. You know, there's certain fines that are spelled out in the Practice Act, but we cannot issue fines and levy fines for violations of the Practice Act.
Okay. All right. Now, we have, we do have a caller on the line. And, Bill, you're on Talk 1230. Do you have a question?
Well, I don't really have a question, but Dr. Kavinko, I'm seeing you today at 10:15. I just wanted all the listeners to know what a great guy you are, and I really appreciate it. Even my own dentist wouldn't see me today, and as far as I'm concerned, my family and I would like to be full-time patients of yours.
Well, Bill, that was awful nice of you to call in. It sounds like a setup. I promise it wasn't. I did not know Bill was going to call.
No, nobody knew. Like, you didn't know I was calling in, but I really do appreciate it.
Well, no problem, and that's where
we don't have to do that. So,
well, I take the word doctor to heart. If I'm going to be called Dr. Kavitko, I really want to live up to that title. And, you know, I went to dental school to do good things for people, to get them out of pain. And to me, it doesn't matter whether it's Sunday, Saturday, a holiday, or my birthday, or 1 in the morning. It's hard for me to say no to somebody who is in pain. So I hope that doesn't mean my phone's going to start ringing at 3 in the morning every night now. But
but I really do appreciate it. And I have to say, I probably called, 10 to 15 different places, and I nobody would ever see me until Monday, and I really appreciate it, and I wish you the best luck on your show, and I'll see you in a little while.
All right, that sounds great, Bill. Thank you for the call.
Thanks.
And you know what, Lily, that brings up an interesting point, because you mentioned that the board regulates a minimum level of competency through training and through continuing education, and of course that initial training through dental school. But it really is up to the individual dentist as to how devoted they want to be, how current they plan on staying. And so there still is this kind of a void out there for the public. How does the public know if they have a dentist that is up on top of the latest and the newest?
That's a challenge for the dental consumers of Ohio, because what the board does is we have high expectations of our licensees, and we expect the most competent professional people to be practicing out there. And the only way we can, you know, have a say in that is to say what their continuing education requirements are and what those hours have to cover. But honestly, I have seen dentists at the 11th hour, 2 days before the deadline for renewal, do 40 hours of continuing education by doing the majority of it online.
Mm.
So, you know, how effective is that in their practice? You know, that's a question. But we hope that dentists take advantage of the, you know, the dentistry is ever-changing. It's always, it's very innovative profession, and there is a lot to learn. So we expect that those dentists who take on some of the areas that are new will seek out the training to be proficient in that.
Yeah, and I, you know, and for the dentists and the dental students that are listening, I hope the same thing, because I'm very proud of my profession. I'm proud of what I do, and I want to know that there are, you know, hundreds of others just like me out there that really, really put the patient first and, you know, the golf game second.
That's right.
Because, you know, it's nice out there today. We could both easily be on the golf course, but we're not, because we're here dedicated to what we do for a living. You especially, because it's a Sunday, and I don't think you ever work on Sunday. Although you didn't get to where you are by sleeping in all the time either. I understand that. We have some, let's see, we have a couple minutes before our first break, and so I think there's time to ask this first question that we received in the form of an email. And it's from Rachel. Rachel lives in Columbus, and the question is, what is the process of filing a complaint? I hate to go to the negative, but let's face it, that's a lot of what you deal with.
Yes,
so
it is.
We'll start
and, you
there.
Know, I want dentists out there to know that although we're not, we are separate and distinct from, say, the Ohio Dental Association in promoting dental, the dental profession in that regard, we our board is made up of 9 dentists who take very a lot of pride in their profession. So we like to, and we hope that by what we do, we lift the profession up. So, but in terms of filing a complaint, we have about 7,000 dentists that are licensed in the state of Ohio, and we get about 600-800 complaints a year, and they come in many formats. We have a complaint form on our website, dental.ohio.gov. Under forms, we have a complaint form, and you can email that to us, you can fax it to us, you can mail it to us, you can call our number at the board office and give a complaint over the phone. We like to have contact information so we know who to follow up with, but we do take anonymous complaints if that's, you know, an issue. You can also make an appointment to meet with one of our investigators and provide information that way.
That's pretty neat. I didn't know about the appointment thing. So somebody can actually sit down and explain what happened, and it's a more personal touch.
Yes.
The dental.ohio.gov, which is dental.oh.gov,
right.
Correct? The phone number, should we give, do you want to give
sure,
them the phone number?
Sure, it's 614-466-2580.
466-2580 in the 614 area code. Very good. That does bring us up to our first break. You're listening to Dentally Speaking with Dr. Kvitko here on Talk 1230 WYTS. We'll be right back. Talk 1230 WYTS, you're listening to Dentally Speaking with Dr. Kvitko, and with me in the studio today is Lily Reitz. Lily Reitz is the Executive Director of the Ohio State Dental Board, so she is here to answer your questions that may have to do with how the Dental Board relates to assuring the overall, I guess, dental health or experience that a person would have when they seek out dental care in the state of Ohio. Remember, our phone number is 821-1230, and let me just throw out the question of the day one more time so you can be thinking of your guess, and that is, of the dentists surveyed, a survey of dentists, how many dentists said that they have either dropped out of or getting ready to drop out of participating in these network plans that the dental insurance companies offer? And the survey, just so that you know, didn't mean, you know, never see a patient who happens to have insurance. It just means not really being on that list or accepting that as payment in lieu of real money, I guess. So anyway, what percent do you think that is? Now, back to the emails. Okay, we have a question, and this is from Kim. Kim is from Lancaster, and her question is, why can hygienists not start nitrous oxide when they are allowed to give injections. So, see, for some people don't realize this, but dental hygienists have now been granted the right to use local anesthetic to numb patients after receiving special training. And this sounds like it must be a hygienist wondering why they are not allowed to turn on the nitrous oxide or laughing gas.
Once again, what we do as a board is regulate and enforce the provisions of the Dental Practice Act. And the Dental Practice Act specifically states that dental hygienists can monitor nitrous. However, it is the dentist responsible for initiating it and turning it off, you know, when necessary. So dental hygienists can only do that under the direct supervision of a dentist as it stands. And that's the same for administering a local anesthetic. It's under the direct supervision of a dentist, so the dentist is given the direction on when that occurs. And the reason why that is because that's how the law states.
Okay. So it would take a change in the law.
That's correct. And we're always open to changes. For example, the local anesthesia allowing dental hygienists to administer local anesthesia was not in the law, and the hygienists, the Dental Hygiene Association, initiated a change in that legislation, and the board was supportive of it. We just wanted to make sure that the education and training requirements were in there before, you know, were satisfactory before we were going to, you know, find that to be safe.
Yeah, I actually had a hygienist who is an instructor at one of the colleges here in Ohio that has a dental hygiene program, and we talked a lot about that. And I think that was a great change. I think that that was maybe a long time in coming.
Right.
And it's been great in my practice. I think the hygienists appreciate it because they can now provide the comfort for the patient rather than having to call the dentist. But I do understand why we have to take baby steps. We have to be very careful because, after all, remember the whole basis here is the dental board's job is to protect the public. And we can't have somebody, I don't know what, 2 years out of high school, literally, for one of these two-year programs. We can't have 20-year-olds out there having their own offices, numbing, you know, doing things that they're just not quite trained to do. Okay, another question. The question is, the one that I wanted to read is escaping me here. Where did it go? Oh, here it is. Okay, this one is from Ben. Ben's from Reynoldsburg. Ben writes, I think I'm being overcharged by my dentist since she's out of my insurance network. Is that something that the dental board can help me with?
That's a good question, and again, the law specifically states when the board can, what issues the board can investigate. We can only investigate alleged violations of the Dental Practice Act. Billing issues, unfortunately, are not one of those issues that we can look into. We will look into it if there appears to be fraud, if, you know, if there's upcoding involved, those kinds of issues, but what I say is a dentist can charge whatever a dentist would like to charge for the services that he or she renders, and if the patient's going to pay for it, it's up to the patient. So, you know, if the patient is unhappy with what they're being charged for specific services, he or she is free to seek other...
Get another opinion,
right.
Go to another office,
right.
Say, what do you charge for this?
Because charges do vary from office to office and from dentist to dentist, and you might want to ask why that is. The materials that are used by the dentist that charges a little more might be better suited for your needs. So those are questions that you need to ask. Just because they charge more doesn't mean it's because they want more money. It may be because the materials that they're using are a little bit more expensive.
Materials are spending more time standing behind their work, possibly. You mentioned the word upcoding, which I know what that means, but I'm going to ask you to explain that to the listeners.
Yes, we had a case recently where we did charge a dentist, as you would say, for upcoding, and it was the example that we used is he charged for removing teeth that were partially impacted when in fact they were not impacted. So,
okay.
You know, you get a little bit more money if you bill for the upcoded for the impacted teeth from
right.
when they're and you know.
And I think another one I remember from a few years back was somebody who was charging for fillings, but it was really just doing sealants.
That's correct.
Yeah, so they weren't really drilling the tooth. There was no decay that they were actually removing.
Right.
And But they bill
the insurance companies for a service that they're not rendering that pays them back more money.
Right. And that, by the way, is insurance fraud. And for those of you that, you know, we seem to keep coming back to this insurance question, keep in mind that one of the reasons dentists don't want to be on these plans is because they are being asked to accept deeply discounted fees, oftentimes in the 40% range, and so there seems to be this incentive to find shortcuts. So the dentists that aren't on these lists, in my opinion, are the ones that have that higher moral fiber, and I might be making some enemies here, I hope not, but who say to themselves, I'm not willing to do that. There's only one way to do this. That's the right way to do it. I was not taught in dental school, and I don't think they teach today what an economy denture is. There is no such thing as an economy denture, and there's only one way to do a denture. So, if you are, you know, if you feel like the fee is a little high, really do some background checking and ask why. I'm very willing to explain that to my patients. We need to go to another break. You're listening to Dentally Speaking on Talk 1230 WYTS. We'll be right back.
So hear me when I'm saying smiling faces.
Talk 1230 WYTS. Welcome to Dentally Speaking with Dr. Kvitko, also known as everything you've always wanted to know about dentistry, but we're too numb to ask. Good morning. I'm General Dentist Dr. Brian Kvitko, and with me in the studio is Ms. Lily Reitz, and she represents the Dental Board, and she's here answering our questions. Before we get back to the questions, we have an email guest. Let's see. It's from a Mr. Yan, and he says that he thinks that 30% of dentists have either discontinued being a part of the dental insurance plans or are almost there. That is not correct, but please feel free to send in your guesses. Also, I want people to know that this broadcast is available on demand by podcast. And what you do is you go to www.talk1230wyts.com. Once you're there, if you hold your mouse over the on-air button, a drop-down box appears. List all of the people that happen to be on Talk 1230. My name appears, Dr. Kvitko, third from the bottom. Click on that, takes you to my page underneath the smile. There's a spot that says go to podcast page, click there, and then you can just choose any of the shows, including this one, about 30 minutes after the show ends, or any of our previous shows. All right, now, back to Ms. Reitz. We were talking a little bit off the air, and the question from the caller was, I'm sorry, from the emailer, was that they had a concern about what they were being charged, and the explanation was is that that's not something that the board has control over. But there is apparently another option for someone like that, and Lily is going to kind of explain that to us now.
When there are certain issues that we can't deal with, such as billing disputes, again, not, something that doesn't rise to the level of fraud, but it's a concern, my dentist charged me too much, or things of that nature, we do let patients know that the Ohio Dental Association has a peer review program, and you can contact the ODA and explain to them your situation, and they might, depending on the, I don't know how, what their rules and regulations are with regards to that, but they might be willing to mediate those issues between you and your dentist and try to come to a result.
Okay.
The way that the member dentist, it would have to be a member dentist for them to engage in that, but the ODA's got about 80% of licensed dentists as members of their organization.
There's a real good chance that your dentist is a member of the ADA, and if
ODA.
They are, ODA,
yeah.
I'm
ODA.
Sorry.
It's okay.
Can you be a member of one without the other?
No, you have to be a member of all three, but the peer review program is through
it's
the ODA.
ODA.
Right.
All right. Well, that's good to know. So hopefully that helps. Carmen from Dublin has called in a question that is, what qualifications do you need to work for the dental board, besides being crazy enough to get up at 7 in the morning
that's
on a
right.
Sunday?
It depends on what you want to do for the dental board. The executive director position at the dental board was an attorney requirement. We have 5 administrative staff. We have 6 investigators. We have an enforcement supervisor. All those have specific minimum qualifications in order to serve in that position. And right now, unfortunately, there's a hiring freeze and everything's really tight. But I could tell you with some pride that the people that we have on staff at the dental board have been on staff for a long time. Mm-hmm. I've been in the position for 12 years. My licensure person has been there for more than that. Same with my fiscal person, same with my CE. So we have experienced people who know the job. So, but when that vacancy opens, all the qualifications for the position are distinct to that position.
Oh, okay.
And we have that documented.
So an investigator would be someone with prior police experience?
Not necessarily has to be.
No?
They might just need investigative experience. And we have two dental assistants, actually EFTAs, that are investigators on our board. Mm. And they started as investigator assistants. And after... one is an investigator assistant and one is an investigator. And the one that was able to be promoted to investigator was investigator assistant for several years and worked with the investigators to get investigative experience that way.
I see.
So, and that's a nice benefit to have.
Yeah, yeah. So she understands dentistry. She's worked in several offices.
Right.
And, you know, in fact, I think that this actually happens a lot. We hear this a lot where I will tell the patient that they need this, this, and this. And then I'll leave the room to either go check hygiene patient or just to, because I'm done. And then we hear that the patient turns to the dental assistant and says, do I really need this? Or what would you do? You know.
Right.
So, I mean, patients tend to relate better to people they consider their peers. And
right.
As much as I would like to think they could look at me that way, I guess they don't, you know. So knowing that those are the people then, the same person you would trust in the operatory and the dental treatment room with that kind of question are the people that you're saying are out there kind of checking things out.
Right. The dental, our EFTAs do a lot of the office inspection type complaints. And I want to assure the dentists out there that our investigator's job is to collect information only.
Okay.
And we have one board member that is a dentist board member that's selected by his fellow members to act as the chief enforcement officer. So nothing can... there's a process that takes place where we have a dental expert involved, and
okay.
we have representatives from the AG's office involved. So before we would ever take action against a licensee, I have a dentist's eyes looking at it. I have attorney's eyes looking at it from the standpoint, is the evidence sufficient?
Mm-hmm.
And we want to make sure before we would ever move forward that we're rock solid before we go.
Okay, because there are different levels of care, several... there's good, better, best.
Mm-hmm. We're looking at minimum standard of care.
Right.
So, right. You need to fall below the minimum standard of care in order to, you know, subject yourself to a look. So,
in my experience in dental school was dental schools around the country, especially here in Ohio, tend to teach absolute excellence. And I think they do that because they know that when you graduate, first of all, there won't be anybody looking over your shoulder anymore. You might get busy, you might get harried in some way, and if you drop a little bit below what they trained you to do, you're still going to be very, very, very good in that, you know, almost excellent.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess I don't want people to think that what you say, minimum level of care, is somehow incompetency. It's just that there's this level that everybody meets.
Right. The language in the law said... that the board can take action for someone who falls below the minimum standard of care for the profession.
Okay.
So we always have an expert in those cases say, this is below what's accepted by the profession.
Okay.
And, you know, we also appreciate that dentists have bad days. You know, we take that, the dentist board members take that into account.
Okay. Thank you very much for that answer. We are up against another break. And when we come back, we're going to continue this discussion with your emails and with questions to Ms. Wrights. You're listening to Dentally Speaking here on Talk 1230 WYTS.
Tell me.
Talk 1230 WYTS, you're listening to Dentally Speaking with Dr. Kvitko, also known as everything you've always wanted to know about dentistry, but were too numb to ask. Good morning, I'm General Dentist Dr. Brian Kvitko, and with me in the studio is Ms. Lily Wrights, and she is Administrative Assistant of the Ohio State Dental Board, Executive Director of the Ohio State Dental Board. I am so sorry about that. that's what happens when you don't pay attention. But now, what we were talking about... is questions that people have sent us in the form of an email, and also some questions that people have called in with. And some of them are kind of pleasant topics and some aren't, but I think we just, you know, need to go with what people are curious about. And here's one that, you know, not such a nice topic, but it says, and it's from Stephen in Pickerington, how many dentists in Ohio have lost their license for charges made by patients? And he didn't say in this year or last year. He didn't really give a time frame, so maybe you can give me some general ideas.
Right. Well, I've been executive director for the board for 12 years, and I could tell you probably there's been a half a dozen dentists that ended up having their licenses revoked. And they were serious situations. They were situations where one dentist that comes to mind triple overdosed a two-year-old patient, and that patient did not survive. So it's a very serious situation sometimes when revocation comes into play. Another case that comes to mind involved a dentist who was unable to demonstrate basic dental skills such as suturing and injection sites, and was not open to remediation.
Wow.
So when you have those situations, and you know, because our goal, if we find an area where a dentist is deficient, we ideally would like to get that person the education that they would need to make themselves better, because then it's a win-win.
Right.
But when that can't happen, or when the situation is so grave, that's when the board will take the most serious action that's necessary.
But even leading up to that, let me ask you, leading up to that, was that dentist or these six dentists, were they practicing while this process was going on? Was there a separate?
The law does not allow us to immediately suspend a license, and unless it's a, there are very few reasons why we can, and
okay.
It's very difficult to do that, because then we have to go to court, and we have to get that permission from the court. But the law says we can go to court to request that under certain situations, murder, you know, those kinds of things. So, yes, when we issue a notice of opportunity for hearing, which is like the indictment, when we issue that, a dentist is allowed to continue to practice until that those issues are resolved.
Uh-huh.
And that's called due process.
Right, right. So kind of the innocent till proven guilty.
Correct.
Kind of. Now, I have to say, as a dentist, I think that that's a bit of a good thing, because taking away your ability to, your livelihood is a very serious
sure.
move.
Yeah. And again, the law says the law allows the board to, again, go to court if they believe the licensee poses an imminent threat to the safety of the dental consumer. And one time we did have to go to court to ask to stop this person. We didn't say practice altogether. We wanted this person to no longer be able to administer general anesthesia until we had the case resolved. And
okay.
That was granted.
Okay, that's good. So again, the underlying theme here is the dental board is protecting the public. The dental board is protecting you. I have a follow-up question, but before I do that, let's go to the phones. Matt, you're on Talk 1230 WYTS. What's your question?
Hey, Doc. I was curious. If I had, a complaint against, a doctor, after talking to him, let's say I still don't feel like the situation was satisfied, should I talk to the state board, talk to an attorney, or is there, a society I'm supposed to talk to? Is there, a chain I should use to help, expedite the situation?
The order of things, I guess, is what you're asking?
Yeah, to help, I know I could immediately hire an attorney and try to sue somebody, but would there probably be a better plan of action?
Well, this is Lily Wrights with the Dental Board, and a lot of times we have patients that complain to us with the expectation that we're going to get their money back, or, we're going to get their treatment redone for them. That's really not our purview. Our purview is to ensure that the dentist that you're seeing is competent. Sometimes that does happen as a result of our investigation. The dentist will say, well, I'll just make it right, or I'll just give the money back. But if that's what you're number one concern is, then you might want to consult with an attorney if you think there's been some malpractice. But you should never feel that you can't come to the board, because if it's something we can handle, we will, and if it's something that we can't, then we'll give you some direction on where to go. So we're a good place to start.
And it's also free.
And it's free.
Okay. Just like Talk 1230 is free. Right? All right. Well, thank you very much for your question, Matt, and Lily for that great answer. We have to go to a break. When we come back, we'll continue this discussion about the dental board and its role in protecting the public when it comes to dental care. You're listening to Dentally Speaking on Talk 1230 WYTS.
Smile a little smile for me.
Talk 1230 WYTS. You're listening to Dentally Speaking with Dr. Kvitko. And with me today is Lily Reitz from the Ohio State Dental Board, the Executive Director of the Ohio State Dental Board. And before I go on, we go on with more of these questions and answers, I do want to give the answer to the question of the day. And the survey was, in a survey of dentists, how many dentists have decided to drop out of the insurance game, meaning they no longer are on the lists that the insurance companies wish they were on? The answer is 55%. So 55% of dentists are now opting to be off the list. And in fact, there's a quote from a dentist in Indiana that says, "We still work with hundreds of insurance companies by filing the paperwork, etc. But by not being in network on any plan, we get paid for what we do." And I think that's a fair request. I mean, you go to work, you're going to get a paycheck at the end of the week or every 2 weeks, however. And if at some point your employer said, "Hey, by the way, next year we're going to pay you 40% of what we paid you this year," you would be very upset and would probably want to quit. Okay, let's go back to the questions that we received from our listeners. And the next one is, well, I have a question before that. What is the most common complaint that you receive against a dentist, or the most common reason for action to be taken?
Right. The primary type of complaint we receive is standard of care. We call it standard of care complaint. So, my dentist did a bad root canal. My dentist did a bad crown. My dentist did a bad whatever. And that, so we investigate those kinds of complaints. And again, we don't necessarily take action in a case where it's a one patient issue, mm-hmm. unless it's a triple overdose of a 2-year-old.
Right.
A lot of dentists kind of have concerns like, well, why are you looking at me? Because anyone can have a bad day. So what we might do in a case like that, you know, where we're looking at maybe we see 2 bad root canals on a patient, we might request 10 other records to make sure that was just a bad day, mm-hmm. not a pattern of bad practice.
Right. Okay. I actually saw a case where I saw a patient come into my office, and they had some very, very good care in their mouth, and then they had a couple teeth that were horrid, just looked like somebody wasn't paying attention at all, asleep at the helm. And I automatically assumed that the better dentistry had been done by a previous dentist and that they had just started going to this individual. And I was told that was not the case. This was the same dentist having done both treatments. And I surmised that, I think it was a little more than a bad day. I think that something had happened in that dentist's life. They'd maybe gone downhill a little bit. I don't know if it was a medical condition, a medical problem, but it was an instance where I wanted to make sure that dentists got help if they needed help. Of course, that protects the public, and it protects me, my DDS. I want people to look up to dentists and be happy that we're out there and come to us. So
you'd be surprised how many complaints we get from dentists who see patients and see care that was rendered that they believe is not acceptable, and we encourage that. So that's a good thing.
Because it's a win-win-win. We all win.
Right.
You know, the dental board wins, the dental profession wins, the patients win if we're all looking out for that.
If you keep in mind that the board's goal is to make the problematic dentist a better dentist,
yes.
By getting them education and training, then you're right. It is a win-win-win.
Yeah. And that education that you're talking about, I had Lindsay Siebert from Channel 10 on when the story about the lead in crowns broke, and they came to the office and interviewed me. And one of the things I said was, we expect our government to oversee this type of thing. We come to expect it. We want it. We're even willing to pay for it. I mean, it costs more money to have dental care in this country than, say, Mexico or a lot of other countries. And there's a reason for that, and it's because we have people looking out for us. I know that one of my patients went to a country where on the door it said, "We sterilize our instruments once a day." And obviously that would not fly here in the state of Ohio. And so we should be glad that we have the dental board out there, and that we are all looking out for the good dental health of our population here in Ohio, and the country for that matter. I want to thank Lily Wrights for being my guest today. And and she's actually offered to do it again sometime because I think she loves getting up this early on a Sunday. But no, I'm teasing. Anyway, you're listening to Dentally Speaking on Talk 1230 WYTS. Tune in next week when we'll have Dr. Bill Dorfman from Extreme Makeover as our guest. Thank you very much.